Well, I'm very pleased to welcome our next guest. We have become pretty good friends over the years. We've had a lot of great conversations around this topic, which is how the energetics, the bioenergetics, affect our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health, and what we can do truly to get to the root of most of our ailments and our chronic illnesses. This is Dr. Eva Detko. She's a PhD and a natural health care practitioner, author, and speaker for over 23 years. She has also successfully recovered from chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and reversed her own Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Dr. Eva now helps others recover their health and has extensive knowledge and experience in the field of human physiology, biochemistry, nutritional sciences, and bioenergetics. She uses a wide range of mind-transforming modalities, including havening technique, brain working recursive therapy, hypnotherapy, mindfulness, NLP, transactional analysis, and applied psychoneuroimmunology. Dr. Eva strongly believes that failure to adequately address the psychoenergetic root causes of ill health is exactly why so many people struggle to overcome their chronic health issues. This is why she has developed the Sovereign Health Solution. The highly comprehensive approach is a culmination of over two decades of study and clinical practice. Dr. Eva, welcome.
Hi, Jason. Hi, everybody. Great to be here. Great to contribute to such a fantastic event.
So I'm curious, what really got you into, or when did you really understand this sort of psychoenergetic component of health and the chronic disease? And if you could, with that, what do you mean by psychoenergetic?
Yes, it's a good place to start to really define it. For me, obviously, health and healing isn't just necessarily about dietary protocols, although those are very important. Absolutely, there's no arguments there. I'm a nutritionist too. So I do obviously advocate that people address the physical side of healing. However, when we're talking about health and healing in general, we do need to recognize that this is a very complex system. And as far as the physical side, which is kind of the most tangible and obvious thing for people to go towards, we also have we have our emotions, we have our mental health, emotional health, and as well as that, we've got our energy field to look after and balance as well, because everything feeds into everything. And so I talk about this triangle of healing where everything affects everything else. And so it's very much that it's, you know, people have the different ways of dividing in those different pillars of health. But when I talk about the triangle of healing, I mean the physical structural health on one side, then the other side of the triangle or the other point of the triangle is the emotional, mental. And then we've got the energetic, spiritual as well. And so we've got our energy. People know we've got obviously energetic electromagnetic field around the heart and the brain, and then we've got our subtle energy bodies. So when we're talking about the psychoenergetic factors, I'm really talking about all of those factors other than the physical stuff, but obviously not neglecting the physical, because like I said, there's just no way you can separate. It's such a crazy thing that's really been going on in conventional medicine, well, since always, that they always try to sort of separate and compartmentalize things. It just doesn't work that way. It's one very, very complex system. And when we look at origins of disease, I know there is a lot of talk about gut health, microbiome and all of that. And again, and I'm not questioning that that's not an important thing to address, but you always have to ask yourself, if I have gut or microbiome issues, or if I have difficulties detoxifying, you know, we live in a toxic world, but not everybody has issues detoxifying. Some people can still do it reasonably well, although obviously detoxing is always a good idea in this day and age. And then other people just have those systems in the body shut down, or at least very sort of limited capacity. And there may be a genetic component, sure, but we like, you know, historically, we like to blame everything on genetics. And again, we know epigenetics we know that this is a science that has brought enough to the forefront now, enough research that we know we cannot go on blaming those things on genetics. So really, when you look back and you kind of go to, well, what's behind the gut not working? What's behind the detox not being optimal? What's behind all of those things? You really will go down to early childhood trauma. You will go down to early social, as I call it, engineering, which means all sorts of limiting beliefs that people absorb from childhood. And then, of course, if you go further, we are looking at birth trauma. That's certainly a big piece for me. Any traumas during pregnancy and during birth. And then also, of course, we've got intergenerational trauma, and then we can go back and back and back, ancestral trauma. So we know that trauma will sit in our energy field, and it will also be encoded neurologically. So we have this whole autonomic nervous system, which is like an interface really for our energetic field, you could say. And then a lot of stuff that gets processed at the brain level within the limbic system, obviously that really makes a mark on somebody's health. And then, of course, we also have trauma sitting in our tissues. So again, even when we're looking at that, there is complexity here and there's layers here, and we really need to be looking at things comprehensively. Now, I focus on the psychoenergetic side of things because from my rather long practice now, I've noticed that really is where people can make most impact on their healing. So most sort of bang for their buck in a lot of ways for a lot of people. And I'm not saying that may not be true for absolutely everybody, but this is my experience from people I've worked with over the last almost 2.5 decades now. And that's certainly been my experience. And so therefore my focus. And that came from the fact that I did have a lot of trauma in my childhood. Like I said, traumatic birth and also some intergenerational stuff as well that I had to resolve and heal. And that early stuff and then the sort of generational stuff as well, that had a massive impact on my nervous system and my early development and how I ended up with this massively dysregulated autonomic nervous system, which then feeds into the physical because of the, people may be aware, the vagus nerve connection and how it, when that all gets out of whack, you get the sympathetic dominance or the dorsal dominance, and then the rest and digest is not really working that well because you've got this constant kind of red alert from the early trauma and you constantly kind of react, or the brain reacts, shall I say, because it's, you know, obviously it's by then it's kind of hardwired in your neurology. And then you will get physical issues. You will have all sorts of function that is suboptimal. If it's even there, it's not going to be optimal because of that vagus nerve connection to all the major organs in our chest and abdominal cavity, including the gut, including liver, gallbladder, and the immune organs, right? Obviously gut being one of them, but also thymus and spleen. So I just hope that I'm making sense here in terms of the complexity and why I want to actually obviously go deeper into the psychoenergetic component, because when you look at the intergenerational trauma, attachment trauma, any kind of big one-off traumas that may have happened, we mustn't forget those, although they're usually not the most impactful. The most impactful are the sort of the micro traumas. That's really what has the most impact on health, because that causes that massive dysregulation within the physiology, nervous system, and then also the energetic field. And then when we look at that, we're thinking, well, okay, so how can we, apart from healing trauma, what else can we do? And you will always come back to what goes on in here, because you could do all sorts of healing and there are great trauma tools that will permanently help you permanently heal trauma. But if you at the same time don't rewire your subconscious limiting beliefs that you obviously acquired early on as a result of trauma and also, like I said, social engineering, then you will always produce more of this kind of emotional energy that keeps you stuck in the disease state. So that's kind of I hope I'm connecting the dots now, why it is that I focus so much on this side of the whole picture.
Yeah, there's actually a lot I want to address there. You really covered a lot. And it's amazing because from my experience as a practitioner, the psychoenergetic aspect of things, the mind, the trauma piece, this seems to be the most neglected when it comes to healthcare. There's just not a lot of people in the West, I find, that really consider that and have the tools to then address it or help people address it. And so in my experience, there's a lot of difficult cases now, multiple autoimmune conditions, multiple food sensitivities, just a lot of things going on in people. And look, I mean, even the ones that are into this world are still having a hard time figuring out what's going on, because to your point, there's so much complexity. There's so much potentially going on. And by the time we get into our, in particular, 30s and 40s and beyond, there's just been a lot of things that have added up, right? And so on the physical side, you know, we address nutrition and exercise and perhaps sleep and some of these really, really important things. In fact, they're critical. And yet sometimes we don't get to the ultimate end game, right? We can't get to the final solution because there's these hidden sort of aspects that are a little bit more difficult to identify unless you've been sort of trained or you know how to look at these things. And so, you know, when I think about something like Ayurveda, for example, or Chinese medicine, you know, they've identified, they talk a lot about the particular emotions and energies that we hold in specific organs, right? Like the liver, you mentioned the liver. Yeah. That's, you know, anger and frustration and resentment. And then we have the what we can call the genetic component, even though I do believe it's a little bit changeable, but we might say our constitution, right, in something like Ayurveda, which is that we all come in with an inherent set of traits or characteristics or ways of being, right? And we kind of know this. Like, we look at people and everybody's got a different temperament. And of course, it's some of it's conditioning and some of it's trauma-based. And there's a lot of layers to that. But there is inherent aspects to us, I think, that we can identify if we know ourselves well enough. And for me, I've got a lot of that sort of fire energy, that kind of anger, frustration. That's when I tip into like my patterns, that's where I tend to go, right? And it's not bad or good. It's just an aspect of energy. But again, if I'm looking at sort of the Ayurvedic map or the Chinese medicine map, then my liver, gallbladder area might be something that I want to consider. And also addressing these traumas or conditionings that tend to tip me over into that sort of energy, right? So when I started to understand some of this stuff, it gave me a good direction to figure out, how do I address me, right? And I can address the gut and do all these things that we talk about. And I can also look at myself and say, what is my constitution? What are my patterns? Who have I become and why? Like, where did that come from, right? Is this me, or is this a patterned version of me, a conditioned version of me? And so I love what you talked about there, because it really becomes a critical aspect of investigation for ourselves. And we can get into sort of the mindset aspects. And I'd love for you to kind of maybe introduce some of that, some of the conditioning, some of the social engineering. How does that then impact our health? And what are we talking about when you say social engineering? How does that even come about? And then what is then the result? And I know there's a lot of results, but give me some examples there.
Actually, yeah, before I do that, I really like to comment on what you said about the energetic connections with the physical. Look at the gut issues themselves, right? And I'm going to be talking about it in terms of the chakras, for instance, and look at the solar plexus chakras. How many people feel disempowered or not really being sure of their own identity? You see, that all feeds into the gut because of the solar plexus chakra connection. So that's interesting, isn't it? There's always a connection. I've spoken to many energy healers, energy practitioners about it. And as much as we obviously will caution against just looking at that. Again, you know, it's like being that sort of extremist, you either just the gut or just the energy or just this and just that. It's just, I just discouraged from that. You know, again, we need to look at the whole system.
I want to interrupt there, Drew, real quick, because I think as a patient or somebody looking for answers for their health, you may be only be able to find specialists, right? So I think as a person trying to get help, it can be really good to go to a specialist who only focuses on the energetics and then find another one that's helping you with just the gut, right? Because in my experience, it's very difficult to find people like yourself and others who really have a good grasp of the whole picture and can help address the whole picture, right? So I just wanted to sort of name that so that people have a confidence about this, where they don't have to find that one person who does everything really well. They can go find their individuals.
Yeah, exactly. And when people have awareness of that fact, it kind of gives them permission to actually go like, hey, I'm going to build a whole team around me of people who can support me. And what I teach above all else, which is hence the title of my book, is sovereignty, which is where we're going. We need to become more sovereign, more trusting in our own ability, one, to heal, but also we are the experts of what goes on in our bodies. Nobody else is. We are. But we've lost the ability. A lot of people don't have the ability to trust it. So that's another thing in terms of when you dig deep into the psycho-emotional, what you also are doing is you get to really know your patterns, your triggers, and what that enables you to do is then tell the, for instance, if I'm feeling suddenly angry, I'm gonna ask myself, why is that? Is this something that, because that, let's say that's my go-to response, just like you said, in my case, it's also that. And everybody's got this overarching sort of go-to response, right? Everybody's got one of them for other people, be fear or grief or whatever. But then if you really, really dissected this in your self-development work, then you very quickly will be able to realize if this is even yours, or maybe it's actually coming from the collective. Maybe you are picking up on the energy that there are a ton of pissed off people out there, right? And maybe you're picking up on that energy in that moment, and suddenly you're going from feeling A-okay to suddenly feeling this wave of anger. Now, this is invaluable to have that level of self-awareness, not just on the physical level, but also at this mental, emotional, and then energetic level to really be able to sense what is what and tell it apart, because then, of course, you will address it slightly differently. Discharging emotion that isn't even yours is very easy. You can do that very quickly with just a few visualizations or whatever techniques, havening, EFT. You can discharge that quickly. In fact, even if it's your own emotion, you can often discharge that quickly. It's just a question of getting to the root cause of that emotion if you want to never have that trigger again. It's a slightly longer process. But if it's somebody else's energy you've just taken on, it's just so easy to let it go. But you need to know that that's what's happening, because otherwise you probably end up throwing resistance at it. And the more you're resisting feeling it, the more you're going to be feeling it. And then it kind of all gets very messy. So I just, you know, wanted to comment on that, because I thought you brought some really interesting things up. So back to social engineering and the patterns. Wow. I mean, this is going to perhaps rub some people up the wrong way. But, you know, at this point in my life, I just don't really care. I need to say what I need to say. I need to speak my truth, right? The point is that there's been a lot of, and in fact, by the way, if people look that up and if they research that, they will know that I am telling the truth. We are being mind controlled from the moment we pop out the womb. If a person is pregnant with a child and they having certain behavioral emotional responses, then obviously that physiology is feeding
those hormones, like all that stuff.
There's hormones, there's energy, there's emotion, all of that again, right? But let's just, for the purposes of clarity here and not making it too complicated, let's say a child is born and literally from the word go, obviously for the very few years of their lives, they're not necessarily going to have their rational thinking develop. We know that's not the case. We take everything at face value for the first few years of our lives. And this is why it's so easy to traumatize a child. It doesn't have to be anything major. It could be something super minor, because trauma is not an event. Trauma is a response. And it's very much dependent on how a child perceives their environment, whether they feel safe, whether they don't feel safe, and so on and so on. But
and one word I like to sort of give people in terms of trauma is overwhelm, right? And it's almost as simple as that. Like when a baby, an infant doesn't have a prefrontal cortex, can't make sense of the world and is in pure feeling mode, there's a sense of overwhelm that happens and they have no faculties to deal with that, right? Other than another person, right? Another nervous system, so to speak, that they can sort of borrow. And that's really what happens, right? And when they breastfeed or they're being hugged or whatever, they're picking up on that energy. And so, I mean, it's simply kind of overwhelm and they don't know what to do with it. They can't rectify it because they don't have the faculties.
Exactly. And so because of that reliance, that's where their belief system will essentially come from right at the beginning. And it's just going to be, if my authority figure says that something is X, Y, Z, then obviously I don't have a better judgment or better knowledge at that point. So I will just absorb it. So on the really kind of like a low impact level, let's just say it could be something like mentality of scarcity, that lack mentality, and that could be present in the family. And a caregiver can very easily pass that on to a child by saying things like rich people are, you know, bad or dishonest, or you have to be a crook to have money, or, you know, things like that, or life is hard and you have to really, really, really work hard, and then you still will struggle to make ends meet, and so on and so on. Okay, so there's obviously that level of things. And when you acquire a set of beliefs really early on in your life that are passed on to you from your immediate environment, then the best absolute thing to do when you get to a certain point in your life and you look around and you think, hey, you know, I could improve this. Why is it that I never have money? Why is it that I always, you know, my relationships never work out, blah, 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 right? Whether it's money, whether it's relationships, it's all the same thing.
In my experience, there's so many subtle aspects, right? So if a parent or a caregiver, somebody you love, a sibling even says, you know, stop being so emotional, right? Then and you can feel it from them. Like they're angry or there's something's happening and they can't deal with you crying or being emotional. What they're actually saying to the, or what the child's perceiving, is that if I'm emotional, then I'm not loved, that I'm not accepted, right? In other words, you're bad because you're emotional, right? Or maybe it's be a good boy and blah, 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 which means that when you don't do that thing, then you're not a good boy, right? And this is that's literally a conditional statement, right? That I will give you love when you do X, Y, Z, but I won't give it to you because you're bad otherwise. Yeah. And so these are so subtle that we take these things on and we become some way because why? Why does the child need to follow these sort of rules?
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of conflict here, isn't there? Because for the first few years of our lives, we are literally programmed to learn in a variety of different ways, to test our environment. We are programmed to experiment with emotions. So like those first few years when kids get, you know, like can get really those tantrums and all of that. All that is that they are programmed to experiment with this emotion so they can learn a healthy expression of that emotion. If that is shut down by a parent, what that will do later in life, then they're not going to have a healthy expression of anger, which may mean that they become either a complete doormat or they will become over-expressing anger. So it can go both ways. You can swing to both of those extremes, because healthy expression was not being learned at that point in time when it was supposed to. And then at the same time, there is this conflict. So my natural instincts are telling me to have that process of experimentation, whether it is screaming, running around, like banging on things or whatever, or whether it's emotional expression. And then at the same time, I'm getting blocked by my, you know, mom and dad or whoever's looking after me, my authority figure, saying that's not okay. And so that is an issue, because this is when we start really experiencing emotional conflict on a really deep level. But this is very, very much messing with our head. And it's very impactful from the point of view of our identity. Because like you just said, if I'm going to be emotionally expressive because maybe I'm a more energetically sensitive child, or maybe I just have different needs to what my parents expect me to have, you know, the needs that they expect me to have. And then I kind of feel compelled to go with that. And I get shut down over and over. Then that's exactly what you just said, is that it becomes, I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Because my parents say this is a bad thing, and that's what I'm doing. That's what I am. So therefore I'm bad. So there's those different crazy conclusions being drawn. And essentially, many, many researchers agree on this, that by the age of 4, most children will have this idea that in some ways I am not okay. This kind of belief, I am not okay as I am. Right? Because I should be X, Y, Z. I should be doing this and that. I shouldn't be doing this and that. And yet I feel compelled, because that's the process of my development, to actually do those things or say those things or not say those things or not do those things. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what's interesting, right? Is because it's so difficult as a parent to guide behavior, right? And to teach a child who is perhaps acting out, who is perhaps doing things that are not healthy and that you don't want them to express, and yet to guide and to teach and to parent in a way that is connected, that is loving, that is accepting, but yet guiding, right? Like, that's a very difficult thing. And so, I even think about it in terms of school, right? If there's been a little bit of a conditioning of, let's say, not acceptance, and that's the biggest part. It's like, all we want is acceptance and unconditional love and connection. Like, that seems like be a simple request, and yet it's so difficult to feel that consistently enough to not develop these things of I'm not enough or what have you. And what's interesting is that these aren't necessarily cognitive thoughts by the child or even us as adults. This is like an energetic understanding of things, right? That's what's so fascinating to me, because even as older children who can conceptualize this stuff, they generally don't recognize this thought of I'm not enough. And in fact, when you bring that up, there's like this confusion of like, no, that's not me. I mean, I'm fine, right? And so when you go to school and then, you know, you raise your hand or whatever, and you give the wrong answer, and then a couple kids laugh, or perhaps the teacher makes a little snide remark, right? Oh, someone didn't do their homework or something like that, right? Like, all of this is, again, that conditioning where we go, oh man, I better not raise my hand again. I better not get this wrong.
It reinforces it over and over and over. Right. And that's exactly what I meant when I said, when it comes to chronic illness, most of the time, because the chronic illness of whatever kind, it never develops overnight. It develops over years and decades. And really, it's very, very rare that you're going to have one a big trauma, like PTSD type trauma, and then you get sick. Yes, that can happen. But most of the time when we're talking about chronic illness issues, chronic manifestations of some sort, whatever they are, diagnosed or not diagnosed, labeled or not labeled, it will always link in some way to exactly what we're talking about here, to poor self-worth, to this kind of eroded, what I call eroded identity, that's been eroded over a long period of time with those really seemingly minor things.
Insignificant.
Because somebody laughs at you because you didn't get something right. shouldn't be that big a deal. You're just like, oh, whatever, man. But for children, it is a big deal, particularly if they already have this underlying aura of not feeling good enough because they got it from, for instance, not being able to express themselves or whatever else. And that seed is sown. And then every single time they get that same feeling, it's reinforced. So then they end up in their adulthood just feeling not good enough, not deserving, self-sabotaging behaviors, all sorts of things will then obviously occur. And that definitely links then to physical health, because that alone, that erosion of identity is actually, this is chronic stress to the body. So let's make no mistake about it. So
real quick, Dr. Yvette, before you get there, because I want to give another example of this, because this, what you're going to is really the crux of what we're talking about here. But there's another side of this, which is that kid that raised their hand and that got laughed at or what have you, they got this sort of unwelcoming feeling. That can then cause the other response, which is not necessarily, I'm never going to raise my hand again. It's, okay, I'm going to study every day for 6 hours so I never get a question wrong, and I become a worker, and I get everything right, a straight A student, right?
Like perfectionist, good little right. boy, good little girl, get that's more not attention bad. And love that way.
Yeah, that's not bad in our society, and yet it can cause the exact same thing physically on the physical side about what you're about to say, right? So I really want you to go there, because, I mean, look, you're a PhD. You've really explored this stuff on a scientific level. This is not woo-woo stuff. We know right now with science what happens on the physical level and how this transfers over to our state of health. So what's going on there after years and years of conditioning? Even as adults, we still carry this with us, and we carry this sort of baseline chronic stress system. What's happening there, and how does that translate to our health?
So you're quite right. Like we said, it can go in both directions. You can become just not interested in achieving because you feel that nothing you can do is good enough, or you can become a perfectionist, which is not a good thing. That's definitely a curse from the point of view of mental and physical health. Same with you could become like overly like wanting to look after everything and just do stuff for other people all the time. So you get that acceptance. So obviously we know there's there are those different adaptations. And it could go in both directions. And essentially this is what I call emotional toxicity. That may not sound very nice, but essentially when you think about it, this is going to cause you every single time you feel that feeling of, okay, here it comes again. Okay, not good enough, not deserving, blah, 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 right? It activates your autonomic nervous system. It activates your fight or flight most of the time, maybe in some cases even freeze, right? Depending on the situation. But it basically means that you are then causing this overdrive within your sympathetic nervous system, which then means that the other part of the system sort of gets left behind. And so you're not able to balance physiologically very well. And when you think about it, why do I emphasize that this is such a big issue? Because when you have those feelings of not being good enough in particular, or having this emotional conflict, or just being like over analytical or overwhelmed or whatever, there are these different symptoms of this emotional toxicity, but most of them, they don't come and go. When you have that poor self-worth, it doesn't go away. It's like, it's almost like that thing that it's always there and it's always activating. So it's almost like you're going to get those micro traumas because you already primed, nervous system is already primed and kind of ready. It's ready, right? Okay, when is that criticism going to come next? Where is it coming from? Next thing, is it going to come from my employer? Is it going to come from my relationship? You kind of learn to expect it. You prime for it. And then it's almost then like a vicious cycle, which then further and further imbalances the body and the entire system, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, you named the exact one that I wanted to mention, which is this inner critic. And that's been a big one for me my entire life. And I suspect that it mostly comes from, again, the critics that were around me. And what I perceived to be, when I didn't do a good job or I didn't do it well enough, then I would feel disconnection or not acceptance or not good enough or what have you. And so I learned to be my own critic, right? That's the irony here, is that my whole life I've had a massive inner critic. Unfortunately, it's not just me criticizing me. That inner critic then also becomes hypercritical of the world as well, because that becomes this mental pattern that I use to find safety, right? And so that's been a big one for me that I've worked, a lot of working on this, and it's still not where I want it to be. I really want to continue to work this part. But that's like every second of your day, you're trying to find ways to improve things, right? That's the continuous improvement. And I was an engineer for a long time. And one of the things in engineering is continual improvement, right? Like that's actually comes from Toyota Production Systems. And there's a whole thing about continuous improvement. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but when it comes with this charge, this energetic charge, and this aspect of safety that is required, and it really can destabilize my system. And I can feel it, right? And so, and another one, as we go back to kind of the example of raising your hand and getting it wrong and not feeling accepted. I mean, I think we can, most of us share this, which is when I go up and give a speech to an audience or a crowd, the physiology changes, right? Even for me still, it kind of changes. I get a little butterflies and I can feel things, you know, ramping up. Eventually I calm down, but it used to be a lot worse, right? That's a perfect example of how much the physiology can change when we do something like that. And why? It's because we're not comfortable with something. There's a lack of safety, a lack of acceptance. If I screw up, then I'm not going to be liked. I'm not going to be accepted. I'm not going to be welcomed. And that's a terrifying feeling, because we need the connection. We're social creatures, right? So I love what you're saying.
Can I comment on that? Because I started saying I'm going to say something about social engineering that may not make me very popular, but I really don't care. And it's that there is an awful lot of mind control. So on top of all of those challenges of just growing up, and challenges from the point of view of parents who, by the way, are never taught this stuff. So how are they supposed to know and get it right? So let's get easy. Go easy on the parents. And you know, I don't want anybody to feel crap about the fact that they messed up their kid. Research shows that if a child feels safe and secure for at least 30% of the time, they're likely to attach securely. Okay, so you don't have to, first of all, get it right 100% of the time.
Well, thank God, because even when you do know this stuff, I can't get it right all the time. So it's part of our patterns are built in. We can't do it right all the time.
No, you can't. So you let yourself... people off the hook straight away, because the moment you start beating yourself up, you're just making the whole thing worse. But here's the problem. We are fighting something else as well. And that is that, I would call it what it is, nefarious mind control that comes from the authorities. The fact that media are controlling people's minds, okay? There is something, if people don't believe me, this gets really, really worse when we're talking about MK Ultra mind control, okay? It's a thing. It's a real thing. Soon enough, everybody will know about it. It's basically, and essentially, the moment you put the TV on, you're being bombarded with imagery, with frequencies, with sound, with symbolism that is going to control your mind. So this is for a reason, because, of course, we want people to believe certain things and act in a certain ways and fall into little categories that enables us to control them much better. Absolutely, this is happening. So on top of all this early childhood development challenges, and the fact that people are not educated how to deal with kids properly and how to satisfy children's needs properly, because they're not, and then we have this whole dark side of mind control, because the moment the kid sits in front of a TV at the age of whatever, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, they're getting so much programming from that. And it's not good. None of it is good. Well, they may be learning some useful stuff. Okay, fine. Maybe it's not all bad. But we need to realize that there are institutes and there are psychologists employed by governments to make sure that people follow a certain line and toe a line, and they basically believe this and that and the other. So that brings me to the same point that I was making earlier. At some point, if you embark on this journey of healing, self-development, self-growth, really, you absolutely need to dissect your belief system and say, okay, well, I've learned this and this serves me. I choose to keep it. And then this stuff doesn't serve me and I choose to change it. And then obviously there are loads of tools that you can utilize, but it's so, I mean, just want to stress, it's so important because a lot of the time people think that like they own their faults and they're in charge, in control of what they're thinking. And I'm afraid to say that for most people, that really isn't true. So if you are going to step out of that system of control, then you have to develop so much self-awareness. The self-awareness is the key piece. It's the core piece. It's the first thing that we need to be doing. And we definitely want to do it on the sort of psychological, mental, psychological level, but also getting more tuned in to your emotions and to energies. Everybody can do it. This is not reserved for energy healers. This is something that anybody can develop if they want to. It's just, you know, a question of making a commitment to it, right? But I just wanted to throw that piece in because sometimes people think it's all as simple as, you know, satisfying your kids' needs. You have to then be on guard when it comes to other people programming your child as well, because it's going to be coming from the media. It's going to be coming from the school. Don't even start me on the school, right? So, right, we know the different crazy stuff that goes on, and some people don't even have a clue what the children are being taught in schools today. But the point is that for some reason or another, you guys can figure out why that is, but can tell you that a lot of it is to degrade children's identity, is to break the family unit down, is to actually just degrade and separate. So you ask yourself why that is, right? But that's for sure something that we also have to be super aware of, because we're fighting against that too.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that I think is really important, which is, and it's difficult, right? I don't, for me, it hasn't been easy to explore all my beliefs and understand my conditioned thoughts and my traumas and all these things. It's been a real path of discovery, right? Some I was aware of at the beginning and I could figure out and I could sort of think my way through and grasp and understand from sort of self-awareness techniques and what have you. And some have been essentially stuck in the body. Like there's a somatic component to some of this stuff. Yeah. And when I start working generally with a practitioner or a therapist or somebody who can help me get into the energetics of the body, they will reveal themselves. And only when they're moving through the body do I have this like flash of understanding. In other words, I didn't understand them and then work them. I worked them and then I understood them. So that was really revealing to me that wow, this can be quite complex. Yes, there's sort of mindfulness techniques, there's aspects that we can cognitively do, that we can consciously do. Like we can look for the good things in life as opposed to this sort of negativity bias that we tend to have, which is find all the dangers. We can train ourselves and we can create new neural pathways, right? To learn to look for the good, to learn to find gratitude, right? That's a practice. Like a gratitude practice is an actual thing that rewires our brain, right? But then there's other things too that are somatic that will reveal. So maybe talk to me about some of this, because you have a book coming out, The Sovereign Health Solution, right? And it's based on your Sovereign Health Method and all the techniques that you use. What can people do? What are some practical things that they can do with a therapist or techniques? You mentioned a couple already. EFT, and I mean, there's EMDR, right? There's havening. What are some things that people can apply to start uncovering some of these conditioned beliefs and traumas that are stored in their system?
So yeah, like we said, it's quite layered, isn't it? Because some of it is just purely in the energy field. Some of it will have subconscious subconscious awareness, not necessarily subconscious awareness, but some sort of, you know, it's there in your subconscious. And if you use the right techniques, you get to it. So a lot of it is not going to be cognitive. A lot of it is actually going to be hidden. And then, of course, there's the tissue stuff. So, yeah, so it's a nice layered process. I definitely, whatever people are doing or not doing about this, I definitely always encourage curiosity. And this is not something to be freaked out about, or, you know, discover that suddenly you got those patterns and adaptations.
And I want to reiterate that, the curiosity. I've heard this from a lot of amazing therapists who've done a lot of work in this. It's one of those signs that I find of a good practitioner or therapist, is that they start with curiosity. Because it's not this like go in and hammer things away and really get dirty. It's like, just start with curiosity. Just get curious about what's going on. Because there's a childlike component. There's this, it's a softer energy, right? To get curious about this and not get overwhelmed and stressed. So I just want to highlight that for people, that I think is a really, really important aspect.
And also, we ultimately, you know, we had it, all of this that we're talking about is leading us to one place. And that is unconditional self-love, right? Self-love towards ourselves. Obviously, we want to have love and compassion towards other people, but we also need to have full acceptance and unconditional love towards ourselves. And so that goes hand in hand, because if you approach it in an aggressive way, then it's almost like you're lashing out, like you want to kind of like, yeah, I'm gonna like pull it out of you. And that's, you know, I don't know. It's a method. You know, for some people it may work, but ultimately, when I'm encouraging curiosity, it is to be like tune into your inner child, tune into yourself, and just ask, hey, how interesting? Isn't that interesting? Because one thing that we know in our Western society is that people fear emotions. That's, to me, is unfortunate, and I spend a lot of time in my method teaching emotional intelligence and teaching people about their emotional triggers, how to uncover stuff. And so that we get to a point where we actually have an emotion coming up, it will bring up curiosity rather than fear. Because if you have fear of resistance, of actually feeling something, because you have no idea where it's coming from, no idea what it's to do with and where it's going to lead to, whether you're going to have a panic attack or this and that, which, by the way, you can stop very easily with very simple tools. Then if you have no kind of connection to that, then yes, you will be frightened and you will react you'll be fear-based and you will react aggressively, and then you create resistance and then you feel it more, as we said before. If you have more awareness and more, you know, if say somebody comes through the door and they say something in a certain way and they trigger you to feel defensive, for instance, and then you go in your head and go, okay, yeah, just felt that. Huh? I wonder what that's to do with. And then you process it a little more because you've already done the work, right? You've done the work. And then you think like, oh yeah, I know. That just reminded me of how my father like talked to me when I would come back at school and bring a lower grade or something, you know what I mean? And then in that moment, you become a child and you're connecting to that same emotion, and that it comes up. And then as an adult, what that can do is for you are very much in that moment, could be, could show your defensiveness towards the person. They have no idea what they've just supposedly said or done to upset you, but you come across upset. It may result in an argument, and it just kind of, it's like a whole cascade of things that you could have stopped by just sort of taking that moment, going in and going, oh yeah, no, I know, I recognize this. I know where that is. See, like tune into the body, where that emotion is in the body. And then you immediately go, hey, yeah, I know what that's to do with. And then oftentimes, if I have those moments, I'm always curious about what I'm feeling, because it's always an opportunity for growth. It's always an opportunity for growth. So even if you get triggered and you get curious, you probably, if you figure it out, you end up laughing it off. And it discharges it, because in that moment, rather than throw resistance at it, and dig your heels in and go like, I don't want to be feeling this right now, or pretending that you're not feeling it, or however that resistance looks like, or you attaching a narrative in your head to and making a big story about it that's not even real. When you're doing any of those things, you're only just going to feel it more. It's going to get in the way. It's going to make you miserable. It's going to get in the way of your relationships, blah, blah, blah. It's going to have massive knock-on effect. And energetically, it's going to then negatively affect, you know, several people that you're dealing with, you know, like the by several degrees, you're like spreading that energy out, right? So it just for every single thing that you can think of, you know, that there is no disadvantage in terms of being curious, learning a little bit to connect, and don't be afraid of feeling, because emotions are just energy. If you don't resist them, they will work through you. If you approach it from this perspective of, yes, I'm feeling it, but it's just a passing thing, because it's always, unless you hold on to it, it's transient. So it's going to pass through you, and then you let it go, and that's fine. So is it a problem that you're going to get fearful or angry or sad? It's not a problem. You're only going to have a problem with those emotions, which are, you know, people consider, you know, quote unquote bad or, you know, unpleasant, if you make them stick around and that you've experienced them chronically. This could be obviously trauma related, and often is, but often in the moment, people are winding it up and up and up. Like, look at a panic attack. What's a panic attack? It's not a thing in itself. It's just that you have a fear, and that fear comes and starts physiologically messing with you, and you're noticing that maybe your chest is getting tighter, maybe your heart rate is going up, maybe your mouth is getting dry, and it's like, okay, something's going on here. And the moment you start thinking that, and you're thinking, oh my God, I don't want to be feeling this. Where could this lead? I mean, something could happen to me. Maybe something wrong is happening to my body. And then you, before you know it, you've wound it up so much, and you go down and down and down and down that spiral to a full-blown panic attack, right? When in that moment, really, you could have just slowed your breathing right down and doing a bit of havening, and before you know it, a minute or two, and that's it, it's gone, right? It's gone. So that's just, you know, there are so many different things we can do, but if we invite curiosity, and if we understand that emotional energy is not to be feared, it's just to be experienced, and we let it work through us, and then fine, it's dealt with, and we can grow from that, then people are really onto something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I love what you're saying, because it's, in my experience, it's about developing this fluid system, right? And there's sort of a practice to that. In other words, the more I sort of clear some of the things that have been stuck in my system, right? The different experiences and the conditioned beliefs and all these things, it feels like they're caught. They're caught in my body. They're caught in my energy field. I've basically held on to them or didn't know how to process them and generally I've required help in order to process some of these things, right? Oftentimes there's another nervous system that can help us, until eventually we become, I think, what your book is talking about, which is this sovereign being, and we can start to do this on our own, right? But generally, in my experience, there's a little bit of help that maybe isn't required, but it's nice to have. It's a good thing to have another nervous system, somebody who can help you process these things. And then what I found is that I've gotten so much more fluid. As you mentioned, you know, these things like anger and fear and just any kind of distress, it's like there's a comfort with those now. It's like, oh, I'm feeling anger. Ooh, let me actually fully feel that anger. Like, ooh, yeah. Isn't that like there's a lot of power there.
Yeah, the moment you feel that, it will dissipate, right?
Yeah. That's exactly and there's a lot of life force energy behind it, right? And then I've just developed a different relationship with that stuff, which is that it is what it is. It's not bad or good. It's just an emotion. It's just an energy that we actually call emotion, and we can feel it, right? And it feels interesting now. And this can be the same thing.
Yeah, and I think that's very important what you just said. It's not judging it. We're not judging it. It showed up. It's not. No emotion is bad, period. They all have their own specific functions and reasons why we feel them in the first place. As we know, so fear is about survival, anger is about boundaries, sadness about letting go, blah, 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 right? So they all have their own unique purpose. So we definitely don't want to just shut them down and never feel them again. It's not about that at all. Some people just would like to just shut down and not feel, and they do, don't they? They dissociate completely, which is very unhealthy for the body. But it's exactly as you said, it's feel it fully, just experience it. It's showing itself up for a reason. What is the reason? What is it trying to tell you in that moment? Is it that your boundaries just been violated? Is that why you're feeling angry, right? And if that's the case, then what you're doing about it, it empowers you to, in that moment, feel it, get the message, because there's always a message. Not judge it. It's not bad, good, or otherwise. It is what it is. And then act accordingly. If you realize that, hey, I'm feeling angry because somebody's in my face and they're violating my boundary, then what you're doing about it? You can, in that moment, act on it, right? But if you are just going with an emotion and just thinking, I'm getting angry, I don't really want to be feeling angry right now, then you're going to just feel internally like you're imploding. And yet the situation is not going to improve because you haven't got enough awareness and resolve in that moment. You're fighting the emotion rather than going along with the emotion. And so therefore, there's unlikely that you're going to have a proactive stance or being empowered enough to address the situation, right?
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's all information, right? It's there's actually information there to help you understand something that's going on, and generally it's connected to something in the past, as we've been talking about, right? It's triggering something that is unresolved from a past experience. And so if we can get curious about that, if we can explore that, understand that, then what I found is that these feelings or emotions, they tend to change their flavor. In other words, anger and grief, anything like that that we associate as not really inviting, it doesn't feel the same to me anymore. Anger feels actually a little bit different than it used to. Grief feels a little bit different. There's a certain pleasant quality to it. It's very strange. I can't explain it. But the first time I experienced it, there was this pleasurable aspect to this grief that I was feeling. And I'm like, whoa, that's really weird, because on one hand, boy, it hurts. And on the other hand, ooh, there's something nice about this. And I think part of it is because I was moving it through the system instead of having it stuck, right? And that's what we're afraid of, I think, is that when we feel something, and what we really don't want to do is have it stay stuck, because that's uncomfortable. And yet what we're doing is actually keeping it stuck because we're afraid to feel it, right? So I love this. We can go on for hours, Dr. Eva. Please tell people where they can find more of your work. And I think your book is coming out, or it's in pre-sale right now. So please tell people where they can find that too.
Yeah, it is. And what I've done with the book is I've got online programs, but obviously that's not necessarily something that everybody will want to do. And so I wanted to put it in the book form. However, because there's only so much you can teach via a written form, this book actually comes with videos and audio as well. So it's not just a self-help book. It actually comes with audio and video training to just help facilitate certain methods, techniques. It's very, very practical. This is like, we're really getting into, let's do some work here. It's not just about you reading a book and then going back to leading a life that you've always led, right? Let's actually do some work here. Let's have some transformations. So I thought I needed to support it with some extra resources. So that's what I've done. And when you go to my website, which is dr-eva.com, it's just right there on the front page, obviously, because I'm so proud of it. So
writing a book is not easy. So there's a lot of work that goes into that. And then when you have other material that's supporting the book, I honestly can't imagine how much work you put into that. So
yeah, it's been a long process, but hopefully I genuinely feel, you know what it's like when you actually publishing a book and you have to make an investment, because publishing, I have a publisher, so it's not a cheap process, but that's okay. I may not even, recover the investment, whatever. But really, I really wanted to get more exposure for my methodology and my work. And obviously, as we know, books can do that. So, and hopefully that will be the case here.
Yeah, no, it's great. And your work is very comprehensive. So I encourage people to check that out. There's something for everybody, I think, in your work, which is really powerful. So Dr. Eva, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I hope everybody enjoyed this.
Thank you very much, Jason. Great to talk to you as usual. Thanks, everybody.